Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast coming at you on a Thursday morning. A couple nights ago, the Bucks took down the New York Knicks. They just roll right along. They have, what are we up to, Matt Velasquez? Is it 36-6? I've started to lose track a little bit. I think it's 36-6, right?
That's where we are.
Awesome. He's Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter who covers the Milwaukee Bucks. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. We will continue to try and find new things to talk about when a team just wins all of the games. The Bucks again in cruise control against the Knicks. It was never in doubt. Giannis Antetokounmpo. I've been saying his name wrong. Antetokounmpo is incorrect. It's Adetokounmpo. Had 37 points in 21 minutes, which is obviously preposterous. And, you know, Matt, we are now across the midway point of the season. That was the first game of the sort of official second half of the 2019-2020 season. The Bucks are on pace to win 70 games. That is something that has been done twice before. And of course, the franchise record, maybe not of course, but some people know the franchise record is 66 games, that 1971 championship team. So I'm going to start this one with just a simple buy or sell or true or false, however you want to look at it. This team winning 70 games, or at the very least winning 66. So far, I have seen nothing to suggest that this team is slowing down or that they're going to have hiccups against bad teams. We have not seen that at all. What do you think about the possibility that this team hits that 70-win threshold? I know that's asking a lot, but I'm starting to feel that it's possible.
Yeah, I think the team, they can win 70 games. I wouldn't say that after watching them win 35 out of 41 that they can't do it. But I would say that they won't, or they're at least not likely to. I think part of that is that their schedule is backloaded with a lot of games against tough top of the Eastern Conference opponents. And also, you know, they have the Lakers again. They have the Nuggets twice. They have some, you know, the Rockets again. They have some tough games in the second half of the season. They're up seven games in the East right now. I expect that they will maintain a cushion throughout the rest of the season and will be able to wrap up the one seed with a handful of games to go. And I know that they are not worried about 70 wins. They're not trying to set any records. They frankly don't care about that, at least as far as I can gather from talking to players and hearing what Bud has to say and all that. I think they all know what happened to the Warriors team back in 2015-16. They won 73 games. They were incredible and entertaining and just like dominant all season long. They got to the finals and they got beat. And, you know, everybody remembers that. They remember that they got beat, not that they won 73 games. And so the Bucks kind of saw that and they're like, okay, like, you know, we're just going to do what we got to do. Like, the goal is to get the one seed and do it probably in as few games as possible.
They have done that. I believe the one seed is pretty much, it's not clinched, but it feels like it.
Yeah, exactly. When you're seven games up, and you're 36-6 and you haven't, you know, lost back-to-back games or two games in a row all season, you're in a pretty good spot. Once they can mathematically clinch that, they're going to throttle down. Like, they are going to, you know, I think they've saved a lot of their two-way player games or days of availability. So we'll probably see a lot of Cam Reynolds, a lot of Frank Mason. We'll see a lot of Sterling Brown and DJ Wilson and Dragan Bender. You're going to get a lot of those guys. And obviously with the depth that they have, they don't have a ton of guys who don't play all that often. But, you know, Thanasis Adetokounmpo, I can see a game where he plays like 45 minutes, late in the season. I can see multiple games where he plays a lot of minutes because the Bucks are going to have that seed wrapped up. They'll just be waiting to figure out who's coming to visit them in the first round of the playoffs for games one and two. And they're not going to make any kind of big push as long as they don't need to. If they're still battling for that one seed, maybe they will, but I don't expect that'll be going on for very much of April.
All of the dunks if Thanasis plays 40 plus minutes in a game somehow. That would be just so many dunks. If you look back at the 1971 team, a lot of the guys, I've actually talked to some of the guys on that team, and they'll tell you too that they were in cruise control and totally dominant and knew what their playoff destiny was, and they didn't shut it down exactly. Like, Kareem played a fair amount, but they weren't interested in any sort of win records or anything. So even they would say 66 is kind of on the low end of what that team maybe could have even achieved if they had been in some sort of heated race toward the end of the season. You posted something at jsonline.com that looked at the Bucks at the halfway point, kind of a really nice in-depth by the numbers sort of, looking at each player and pointing out something that maybe has gone below the radar or is just something of interest that sort of highlights each player and what their story has been. As you looked at putting that together, was there one, maybe two things that particularly jumped out at you that really surprised you or that really illustrates a point that maybe you hadn't quite considered in that way before?
I guess there's a couple things. I think one of them was Wesley Matthews. Like, we all know that, like, he hasn't taken a ton of, you know, 2-point shots, doesn't have the ball in his hands a lot. But just seeing that he had, like, the fewest touches on the team, or, like, the fewest touches, he's the only guy who had fewer touches than minutes played. Like, you know, like, you look throughout the whole roster, and, like, guys are touching the ball, like, at a higher, like, touch-per-minute rate than he is. So he, like, doesn't have the ball in his hands very often, has the lowest usage on the team, at least when he's on the court, you know, and, you know, but he has a pretty good points per touch. So he's not getting it very often, but he's putting up these threes, and he's not shooting them, you know, great. 35.6% is a little bit above average, you know, but that's solid. He's not turning it over very often. I couldn't really find a ton of defensive stats because, like, obviously, like, what he's doing is mostly on the defensive end, and then he's peppering in some offense here and there. But I thought that was kind of interesting to be able to put numbers to just his almost invisibility on offense, or at least his stealth on offense, if you want to call it that. Maybe put a more positive spin on it. I think that also looking at the bench, it was hard for me to find anything for Pat Connaughton because I was trying to find things that were, like, generally representative of, like, what the guy's been about. Well, also not, like, you know, throwing a ton of shade at guys because I mean, on a team this good, like, you don't really need to be throwing shade. But, like, I couldn't find anything that was, like, pointing in, like, a super positive direction for Pat. I mean, just that he's out there. He's getting rebounds. He's hustling. He's blocking some shots. He's throwing down some dunks. He's shooting pretty well. I mean, 61% on 2-pointers. It's about half of his shot attempts are 2, so that's pretty good. But the biggest story for him has just been that he's not making threes. Again, last year he got off to a slow start and started to heat up a little bit. But this year, you know, 28.9% heading into the Knicks game on threes. You know, that's not going to get it done. Or I mean, I guess it is since the Bucks are doing great. But, you know, it's not where you expect him to be. It's probably the better way to put that. He's a higher percentage 3-point shooter in his career than that. He also was down last year. You wonder if it's just a prolonged slump that maybe he's going to be able to get himself out of it at some point soon. But we'll see if that comes. I thought it was kind of funny just seeing that Kyle Korver's average shot distance was, like, basically a 3. Like 23.3 feet is, like, the average spot he takes a shot from. 81% of his shots are threes, which, I mean, it makes sense. It's exactly what the Bucks brought him in to do. But just to see, like, how extreme those numbers skew, it's just kind of entertaining to me. So those are the ones that kind of stood out. Everything else, you know, kind of fell in line with what I expected or was more maybe something that I had on my mind or had an understanding of. But those ones are ones that jumped out, I thought, a little bit.
It's been two really good games in a row for Giannis. He, of course, like I said, 37 points in 21 minutes. I can't stress how impossible that is enough against the Knicks. The Knicks were not, they were not a factor. On Tuesday night, before that, Giannis played very well in Portland, which I think the headline there at the time was, surprised Giannis played at all. It seemed like he'd been slumping, is of course the incorrect word, but that he'd been laboring a little bit more just with his back, and so he hadn't had some of the best statistical games the preceding week, and it's off of a back-to-back on a West Coast trip, or the second game of a back-to-back, and he plays at Portland, plays extremely well. The Bucks as a unit play extremely well and handle a solid Portland Trailblazers team. And we've talked about Giannis's usage and how it is tied more to his in-game usage than it is resting. And he certainly has missed a couple games with this back injury, but it's all about the number of minutes that he's had to play. It's very low for a superstar in the NBA, and that's kind of how Mike Budenholzer has been able to get him some breaks. But I guess I'm just curious, checking in on the health of Giannis, his back. It's obviously not something that they're too worried about, or he would not be playing against the Knicks or in the second game of a back-to-back. At the same time, it's something people have noticed. So what sort of terminology would you give this back injury? Is it a mild concern? Is it just an ache? Like, what would you think of it?
I think maybe mild concern would be fine. Mike Budenholzer in Sacramento, he was asked about it, and he was like, yeah, it's January. You know, guys are feeling it a little bit. Guys have their bumps and bruises and aches and pains. He didn't think it was anything outside of that. I'm 100% sure that the Bucks are putting Giannis through every test. They're making sure, every opportunity to get every way they can to make sure that he is fine and that there's no measurable damage or issue they need to be worried about. They know he is the franchise. Like, they're pretty smart. It's pretty straightforward. And so I think that, he can tell them, yes, like my back's not feeling great, and they can check it out, and he can get massages, and he can get worked out, and they can see, what kind of load and he's able to bear on that back, and how that compares to regular numbers he's able to put up, or maybe pre-injury numbers. And there was a time where, they discerned that it was in their best interest and his best interest to sit. And since then, they've been managing it. He's no longer on the injury report. And there wasn't enough, for them to say, hey, like, let's have him sit against Portland, because, there was nothing measurable, nothing that they could do, to keep him out of the game. And he didn't want to stay out of the game either. And the NBA obviously doesn't want him to stay out of that game. I know there were a bunch of people in Portland who were like messaging me. I think somebody emailed me like 5 or 6 days before the game, like, hey, like, do you know if Giannis is going to play? This is my one chance to go see him. And so that's another thing that goes into this, that, we've seen recent games where, Dante DiVincenzo set out to rest, and, against the Knicks, Robin Lopez set out to rest, and, the Bucks just put rest on the injury report. But if you put Giannis Antetokounmpo rest on the injury report, like, that is a big deal, especially in a road game. When in a city you only go to once, people are going to be very upset. The league is going to be upset. That's going to, look very poorly for the Bucks. And so, because they didn't have any reason or any numbers or data to be able to back up an actual injury diagnosis, he played. And I thought it was really impressive, coming off of a game in which he had a season low 13 points on a season low 9 shot attempts against the Kings, that he came out of the gate like looking for blood. Like, he saw Anthony Tolliver was on him, and he immediately, I'm sure, had the thought, like, there is no way Anthony Tolliver can guard me. And he's right. Like, that, there is no way. It's not possible. I mean, we saw it put into action against the Blazers. Giannis got basically wherever he wanted. He was bigger, stronger, faster, was throwing down dunks, getting to the lane, set a tone for the Bucks in that game. And no, he looks fine. And I tweeted during that game, like, hey, if you were worried about Giannis's back, he's fine. And as he's shown, that game and then playing, 22 minutes or 21 minutes against the Knicks, he's definitely fine. He's doing great.
It's always fun. You mentioned sort of the bench guys getting a game off here or there. It's like a rotating wheel. Which reserve is going to be held out tonight for rest? And the Bucks have the luxury to do this. You had Ersan sit out a game. George Hills sat out a game. Korver gets quite a bit of rest on back to backs and stuff like that. But it is nice that they've been able to do that, because the bench has been so good. Connaughton had a game off, and this is kind of dovetailing slightly into the situation with DJ Wilson, who has not played very much at all. The bench guys have just been so valuable. And even when they do get rest here and there, DJ Wilson's minutes have been pretty limited. And Coach Budenholzer talked about that, I believe, before the Knicks game, and didn't exactly give a resounding vote of confidence. I mean, it wasn't denigrating by any means. It was just, the minutes aren't there for him, and he's not sugarcoating that. He's not going to be in the rotation. He's not going to be a guy that gets off the bench very often. Meanwhile, guys like Dragan Bender are getting first quarter minutes against the Knicks, and certainly it's not a, you know, you're seeing DJ Wilson here and there. But he was such a kind of revelation last year. I'm sort of feeling like he's on the outside looking in. If anyone on this roster, with the exception of like Thanasis, who is, you know, he's just there for the end of game moments for the most part. I think we kind of all understand why he's there. But it seems like DJ maybe has, maybe has just fallen out of favor to some degree. Do you think we're kind of headed toward the end with him, that he might be traded, or that it's I don't know. What's in the crystal ball for DJ Wilson?
You know, I don't know what it all means in terms of like if he could be traded or not. It all depends on what they're going to do with the trade deadline, which I'm sure we'll talk about again. But, you know, the way Bud summed it up was basically Ersan is the backup four and Rolo is the backup five. And he's not playing any other, you know, front court players besides those two as backups. Because most of the other guys are wings. There have been a lot of games recently where I know like the Kings went small. And the Warriors went small, and so you don't really need to put in a bunch of guys. You're playing a bunch of wings. You know, you got Connaughton and Sterling Brown and Dante DiVincenzo and George Hill and Kyle Korver. Those guys are all going to play, and so there's just no room for DJ. And, you know, if Ersan wasn't playing well, I think there'd be a much bigger clamoring for DJ, but Ersan's been good. I mean, his rebounding has been really good. His scoring has been better than last year. There's not really a ton that you can point to say, oh, Ersan like needs to go. And then, you know, Robin, like he's there for a kind of a different purpose, to be that big physical backup center. And they want to make sure they get him some run and have him work on his shooting and his chemistry within the offense and all that. Cause they're going to need him at some point, in the playoffs for sure. You know, and I think that people tend to forget that yes, like DJ Wilson had a nice stretch from like December to February of last season. But after that, like when he did get opportunities, and yes, there weren't as many opportunities because of the Mirotić trade, but when he did get opportunities, it wasn't like he was like, you know, gangbusters like for the last like, you know, 2 months of the season. And it wasn't like it was only like five games. I'm pretty sure it was like, you know, probably 20 to two dozen games over the from the trade deadline to the end of the season. He got out there, he didn't shoot very well. He wasn't a big part of the offense. The Bucks still had like the best defense in the league, even without him playing a lot, which is the situation they're in right now. So it's not like, oh, you need him for defense. Like, well, I don't know that changing something on their defense necessarily makes them better. Maybe it does. Like, maybe it could make them better. But they are still like number one in defense and 36-6 overall. So like, you know, could you improve on the margins and maybe in certain games, like, you know, where the teams are more athletic and there have been matchups where Ersan has looked overmatched and it's too slow. Maybe those would be games for DJ, but that's just not how Bud like sees it. He doesn't game plan for other teams. He game plans for his team. Like, yes, they know tendencies and things other teams do, but like he uses the regular season as like practice for the postseason, the time to build up habits. We've heard a lot of guys, you know, echo that statement, like they're trying to build habits over the course of the regular season. And so in the playoffs, if you're going to have Ersan playing and you're going to be playing your drop scheme and not playing a ton of doing a ton of switching in man to man, like you want Ersan to be able to practice that, be better at that, and have his opportunities where he can get experience or more experience, you know, if you do switching onto guards and seeing how he handles that and maybe, you know, coming up with some better habits or ways to handle that. You don't want to be like, oh, well, we're going to play a more athletic team. Let's just put DJ out there. We don't want Ersan to ever do that. Because then you're sacrificing some of the other things that Ersan does and ways that he plays the game and spaces the floor and rebounds and all of that. So I just think that if they have to make a choice, it's they have chosen. And they'd rather have Ersan playing those minutes than DJ. The big question is what happens at the trade deadline, because if the Bucks want to make a bigger or, you know, medium-sized move that involves a decent amount of salary, they'd probably have to include Ersan in that deal to match salaries. And unless you're bringing back somebody to replace him, that would leave DJ as the next man up. He'd be coming in kind of rusty and underutilized. So, you know, maybe that would be of interest if they wanted to move on from DJ. Well, he could be considered one of their assets. He is under contract for a rookie scale amount this year, and they already picked up his option for next year. So whatever team that got him, maybe they might be a team that is, kind of toward the bottom of the standings or rebuilding or whatever, and they have minutes that they want to give to DJ to see what he can do and see what he can be when given more of an opportunity, more of a role. And so, they would know that they would have him for this year and next year locked under contract, at a pretty reasonable rate. So he could be considered an asset. It's just a question of what are the Bucks trying to bring back, because he could also still be an asset for him next year. He may not get a lot of run this year, but depending on how things shake up over the summer or heading into next year, maybe there becomes more of a role for him or more opportunity for him. Or they just say, hey, like, he's an expiring contract that we can trade, next year. So there's no immediate need for them to trade him unless another team views him as an asset that they can include in a trade to potentially bring back someone who the Bucks believe can help them more right now.
It's easy to forget how raw he was. He was pretty young coming out of college. He was kind of seen as a little bit of a project, Sometimes guys take 4 years to really kind of get up to speed in the NBA, and you could see DJ Wilson sort of, one day popping more so than he has so far, and I don't know if that'll be in Milwaukee, but it makes sense, like what you're saying, giving up on him, just, throwing him in a trade or something, that's not going to be something that the Bucks are interested in doing. Let's talk more about the trade deadline. I know we broached the topic last week, but it's probably something we'll spend a little bit of time on in every podcast going into that February 6th trade deadline. There'll be a lot of eyes on it. Talked about the challenge of a Bucks team that's been just cooking and why they may want to adjust their chemistry and how the playoffs are obviously the thing that they're looking at now. You mentioned Ersan Ilyasova. I think it's hard to maybe do this exercise that I want to do here because you never know what type of player the Bucks would be getting back. But it seems like if there's a trade, Ersan's got to be a guy who is in that trade. Are there other players that you feel like are maybe because they're top of the line assets, a guy like Dante DiVincenzo, or their contract is set up a certain way, that if the Bucks are making a move, these guys are almost certainly going to be part of what's going in the other direction? Or is Ersan maybe the only example of that?
It's probably only Ersan, because if they want to trade for somebody who's making more than, let's say, $8 or $9 million, like, it's gonna be really hard for them to cobble together enough contracts, because so many of their guys are making, $4 million or less, and a lot of them are making less, and so you'd have to, just to get to like $8 million, you would need like Dante DiVincenzo and Sterling Brown and DJ Wilson, and I think you might be there, but like, that's three guys. Like, do you really want to give up those three guys, especially young guys, for whoever you're bringing back? Then who do you return? Actually, that might not, three, and yeah, that's like not even $8 million yet, which is insane. But Ersan, he's under contract for $7 million, so. Now that I'm looking at the numbers, most guys are actually under $3 million. So Wilson, DiVincenzo, Matthews, Connaughton, Bender, Korver, Brown, Thanasis, all those guys that I just listed, that's, seven guys who are making under $3 million each. So it's just hard, to put together enough guys to be able to find enough salary to bring in somebody, who is making $8, $9, $10 or more per season. And so you need to put Ersan in there. He's kind of that guy who everything would hinge on if they wanted to make a bigger deal and go after a Robert Covington, a J.J. Redick, an Andre Iguodala, and anybody like that, Drew Holiday. Those are the ones that kind of jump off the top of my mind. But if you want to go after any of those types of guys, you're going to have to include his salary, but is he someone that opposing team wants? Is he someone who fits into what they're doing? Yes, he can be expiring because, he's a $7 million team option for next year, but does some team just want to, give up a valuable player or a player who on the market could be perceived to have value for just the ability to waive or, you know, not pick up the option of Ersan this summer, let him walk and go somewhere else, while maybe grabbing like one of the Bucks' young guys who they'd be willing to part with. I don't think they'd be willing to part with Dante DiVincenzo. It doesn't make sense, given all that he's done and the way that he's impacted them. So would you want to take DJ Wilson, who is kind of an unknown and is a risk for you to bring back, plus Ersan, you know, and maybe like that first round Pacers pick, like to work with the Bucks? Like, is that something that a team would want? I'm not sure. Also, would the Bucks want to give up like their number two like guy behind Giannis in terms of like, you know, their number two power forward on the depth chart, and then also their third string like power forward? Like, you better be bringing back somebody who can play that position, because that would obviously leave them at a loss. So it's just hard to come up with a great deal or that the Bucks could make that could beat out other potential teams who are in the trade market, just based on what assets the Bucks have and the risk reward that would be present, and all of that. So it's really hard to figure out what they're going to do and whether or not they're going to make a trade.
You did mention the summer, so I'm going to use that very fleeting reference to talk about the summer just a little bit. Of course, the Green Bay Packers are top of mind right now for Wisconsin sports fans. This is part of the reason why the Milwaukee Bucks, I think, have put together a borderline historic season, and it's just not even the top discussion point among Wisconsin sports fans. Packers are going to be playing in the NFC Championship game on Sunday, and last Sunday when they played Seattle, Anthony Davis was there. The Lakers, he wasn't the only one. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Rajon Rondo were there as well, but the Lakers star Anthony Davis, who happens to be a free agent next this offseason, turns out is a huge Packers fan and took a trip. He's been a little banged up, so he hasn't been playing as much, but took a trip in a place where it's not like the Lakers were in the Midwest. I mean, they were going to be playing against Cleveland at home the next night in LA, so he had to go out of his way to do this. So big Packers fan, hugged Aaron Rodgers, who of course is partial, you know, minority owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, and a lot of jokes about tampering, which was very humorous in the wake of the Steph Curry Giannis interaction in the game at Golden State. But I know there's just no chance that Anthony Davis is going to wind up in Milwaukee next year. On the other hand, it's fun to dream a little bit if you're a Bucks fan, imagining them possibly bringing something like some guy like that in. It is notable that he has not signed an extension with the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't think there's any like realistic scenario where Anthony Davis could be in Milwaukee next year, but how, I don't know. Let's riff on it for just a second. What would have to happen in the dream scenario for Anthony Davis to try and get into get with Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks this offseason?
Well, like you said, I will preface all statements by saying this is not going to happen. This is a Bucks pipe dream that is based in zero reality. But if we wanted to put some realistic constraints on it, he would have to fall in love with the Bucks and say, yes, I want to sign here, but you guys need to clear out max space because I'm a max player because I am incredible.
True.
And so they would say, well, we'll try and do that. And it would basically have to be them convincing the Lakers to do a sign-and-trade where they would the Lakers would sign AD to a max-level deal, which would be the highest max that he could get, as far as I know. But then the Bucks would have to trade Chris Middleton and other salary to be able to match potentially Chris Middleton and, I don't know, maybe Brook Lopez or maybe George Hill. It all depends on how the numbers exactly shake out. I don't know what AD's max would be, but it would be more than, you know, more than the Bucks, have available. So they have to put together multiple salaries. And so, yeah, so maybe like Chris Middleton and Brook Lopez and maybe like a Dante DiVincenzo, something like that. Like, you're going to have to give up like some key important players to make that happen.
And probably draft picks too. The extra draft pick maybe they got.
Well, and give that first round pick from the Pacers if they still have it at that point. Yeah. Now this is all kinds of crazy. I have no way of believing that would happen. This is like a 2K fantasy where like if you were playing on like your own like you know, create a player, or, you know, season mode, or I haven't played video games in a long time, and I probably sound like an old man. But whatever you're doing, like, you can make that trade and you can make it happen, and that would be really fun for you. But it's not going to happen here. As much as AD might like the Packers, like Aaron Rodgers, if the Bucks had every player who liked the Packers, like, I mean, just going off the top guys,
Joel,
like,
Embiid, you know, baby,
Joel Embiid and AD, like, if they all came to Milwaukee, that'd be quite the team, and they'd be paying all kinds of taxes, and who knows if they'd be good, but they'd be really big, and, you know, isn't that what the Bucks are all about, just having, like, a really big team?
Pretty sure Giannis is running the point in that offense, but
absolutely.
That's, yeah. It's unfortunate, but again, it goes back to the trade deadline in general. This team, it works on such a high level. Chris Middleton has been incredible, and there's the game against the Blazers where Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and Giannis were just all clicking at the same time was a sight to behold. I'm not sure we've seen that this season. It's almost to the point where something like the Anthony Davis interaction happens, and I know there were jokes, and, you know, everybody is probably picturing Anthony Davis in a Bucks uniform, but I don't think anybody can even take it seriously. I don't think even Bucks fans that are wishful and hopeful are like, oh yeah, the Bucks need Anthony Davis, because there's such a good thing going on right now. I just don't know what they're going to be able to do that is going to make them markedly better in the playoffs compared to what they have right now. They're just sensational, man. I don't know why you'd tinker with it.
Well, and I think a lot of it with the Bucks and Bucks fans too is just kind of the tongue in cheek of, like, the, you know, I think there's a feeling that every other team is, like, photoshopping Giannis into their team's jerseys. So, like, having the opportunity or any type of reason to photoshop another star player into a Bucks jersey, you know, it just seems fun to them, and I don't blame them for that. That's, you know, more power to them. But I like you said, I don't think anybody's actually expecting that's something that would happen, because that is like radical and ridiculous.
Last thought before I let you go, MVP, Coach of the Year, are those races over and coming back to Milwaukee for a second straight season?
I think MVP is close to over, and I think Giannis will keep it. I took part in a vote with other national and local writers from USA Today, and I'm pretty sure that we picked Giannis Antetokounmpo. I haven't seen the final voting tally yet, but I was asked to write a little blurb about, like, why Giannis is the MVP, which I believe is only going to happen for players who get picked for each award. So I think it'd be Giannis there. That's generally the consensus. I think Coach of the Year is more open. I think in general the voter base, which will be a 100-person or a near 100-person media panel, tends to vote more for, like, teams that are doing things that are unexpected. And the Bucks are not doing anything unexpected. They're doing exactly everything that we expected they would do, in the sense that, like, that they're playing the same way. They're executing the same schemes. It's the same stuff they did last year, just different players, different pieces, guys getting better individually. And, you know, so, like, yes, Bud is doing a really good job, but I don't think he'll get the votes like he did last year. I think that, you know, guys like Rick Carlisle, Nick Nurse, maybe some Nate McMillan in there, Eric Spoelstra, maybe some Frank Vogel. I don't know if he'll get recognized. You know, those types of guys, you know, might be in there. Heck, you know, Taylor Jenkins, former Bucks assistant coach, you know, he might get more recognition or talked about more than even Bud does, because Bud's doing what we thought he would do, whereas Taylor Jenkins is a guy who not a lot of even, like, hardcore NBA people knew about last year, and now he has the Grizzlies playing a really fun, exciting brand of basketball. So it doesn't necessarily mean, like, you know, who is the best coach at all. You know, it's not like we just say, oh, well, you know, Steve Kerr, he's a great coach, let's just keep voting for him. Or, like, Greg Popovich, oh, well, he's a great coach, like, let's just vote for him, he's the coach of all the years. It's just whatever team is doing things that are maybe beyond what we thought they could do, that's usually where it goes. And so I don't think that Bud would necessarily get the votes, but we'll see.
I agree with you. It is all about narratives. I do think if the Bucks encroach on 70 wins, Bud is going to start getting the votes, because now it's going, it is what they're expected to do, but it's approaching historic territory. Then you start to, he starts to become a little more undeniable, but I would definitely be here for a Taylor Jenkins NBA Coach of the Year award. That would be, that would really be something. Memphis has been a lot of fun. So that's all. I think that's all we got today, Matt, unless there's any, anything else you want to throw in, anything coming up at jsonline.com that you're going to be working on in the next few days.
Nothing that currently stands out. You know, obviously we're gonna be getting ready for Paris next week.
Oh, Paris!
Yeah, so we'll be working on that. Maybe next week we'll podcast on Tuesday morning before I go to Paris. That seems like a good idea.
Yeah. Et qu'est-ce que tu penses si nous finissons le podcast en français?
Je m'appelle Matt.
Yes, excellent. I don't know if my grammar is right, but I'm definitely I could get you to the bathroom in the library if you wanted me to tag along.
No, I need to do some studying and some work this week. I went to France once when I was in high school, and I did not take French when I was in high school, but I did a little crash course and some studying with my the class that I went with, and I reached the point where a bus driver told me that he thought, or he told my teacher, who told me, I didn't know that much, but told my teacher that he thought I was actually a French student.
Oh.
So I got by well enough, but I have lost all of that. That was a long time ago. I just need to make sure that I can, like, get to my hotel and, like, get to the game. But luckily there's a buddy of mine who I worked at my college newspaper with, who he is based out of Paris, and he works for the Wall Street Journal out there. So if I need help getting around or doing anything, I can be assured that at least I know someone nearby who can speak both languages and help me out. But yes, I do need to work on my French.
Yeah, everyone in Paris speaks English. They'll all roll their eyes at you and hate you for making them speak English because they have no tolerance for Americans, but they will absolutely speak English for you. So you do not need to worry. It'll be a short trip, but a fascinating one coming up here, where the Bucks take on the Charlotte Hornets, first NBA game in Paris forthcoming. That'll definitely be something that we will chat about on the next podcast. Thanks for joining me, Matt Velasquez. Oh, go ahead. You got any last thoughts?
No, that's it. I'm just excited to see what this week has in store. Maybe there'll be a trade. Maybe there'll be something exciting. Maybe the Bucks just keep beating teams by a million points, and it'll just be the same as it always is. But we'll see. At least we have a game against the Celtics coming up. That's a national TV game, a big time opponent, number two in the East. It's been a while since the Bucks have played anybody good. I think the last time they played an above 500 team was Christmas. So this is fun.
Yep, and of course the Celtics got the best of the Bucks first time around. Bucks had a big lead and blew that one. Hard to believe this team was once 2-2 on the year, now that they're 36-6, but that will certainly be a game to watch. That is not something to just gloss over. So that's what's coming up here in the week ahead. Thank you to Matt Velasquez again. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find him on Twitter at @Matt_Velasquez. You can find me, I'm JR Radcliffe, on Twitter as well at JR Radcliffe. Radcliffe there has an E on the end. You can also check out this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you again next week.